Coming up on Tech News Today, Congress warns business away from Huawei and ZTE. Also, new fitness wristband may be the best yet. And YouTube dropped some money on new channels. All that and more, 45.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, October 8th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile by Citrix. Try ShareFile today. For a 30-day free trial, go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter TNT. And by the new Squarespace. Squarespace introduces a new content management system, making it faster and easier to create a high-quality website or blog or online portfolio. Plus, more than 50 new features, including mobile-responsive designs. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT10. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphones. Find out what your gadget is worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest iPhone at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we try to keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting off with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. Sunday evening, private company SpaceX launched its first resupply mission to the International Space Station. The Dragon capsule reached orbit atop a Falcon 9 rocket. One of the engines in the rocket actually blew up during liftoff, but failsafe kicked in, seemed to have engaged, preventing a problem, and thus begins the privatization of critical space missions. The unmanned capsule should dock with the International Space Station to deliver its cargo on Wednesday.
Last week, Digitimes ran a story quoting unnamed sources in Apple's supply chain that reported two Asian suppliers, AU Optronics and LG, were having a bit of trouble fulfilling Apple's order for 9 to 10 million LCD screens for a smaller version of the iPad. The issue, production problems that forced the suppliers to throw out one out of every five displays coming off the press. Well, that story now has a little bit more weight because the Wall Street Journal is basically reporting the same thing, saying that Apple has ordered up to 10 million units for Q4, which is about twice the amount of Kindle Fires ordered in the same period.
This all assumes there's an iPad mini, which doesn't exist yet. Over the weekend, HSN.com started selling some Windows 8 desktops and notebooks that were supposed to ship right away when you ordered them. Oh, yeah, there's one problem. Windows 8 doesn't launch until the 26th. Microsoft and Acer asked HSN to remove the PCs from its website until then. Ed Bott over at ZDNet laments that these machines will still have all kinds of pre-installed software, otherwise known as crapware, included.
Yeah, no big surprise, though. The U.S. House Intelligence Committee released a report today stating Chinese tech companies Huawei and ZTE pose a security threat to the United States, and they recommend the companies be barred from mergers and acquisitions. The report accused the two companies of not cooperating in an investigation to allay fears about ties to the Chinese military.
HTC's third quarter earnings are in, and they are dismal. The company once again performed below analyst expectations and company forecasts. Profit fell by 79% year over year. The company reported third quarter total revenue of 70.2 billion Taiwan dollars, or 2.39 billion U.S., down from 91 billion Taiwan in the second quarter, which is a drop of more than 20%, down from 135.8 billion Taiwan dollars from a year ago.
How much would you pay for your own vanity number for your phone? How much?
2 cents.
2 cents? Sarah?
Nothing.
Good. Okay, well, Sprint hopes you'll pay $3 a month. I guess they're screwed. In a partnership with Zuve, Sprint will offer its customers the option of having a star-star number. So, for example, if Sarah Lane picked a vanity number, someone could dial star-star Sarah, just type it out on the keypad, and get her. The service will work on iOS and Android, and also works on phones on all major carriers.
How'd you do that?
Lots of work, Sarah. Lots of work. I've been planning this for days.
And now back to Keith Merritt.
As I suspected, ladies and gentlemen, you're pointing your camera wrong. Apple posted a support article this weekend addressing the purple flare seen in some pictures taken with the iPhone 5. Apple says the problem arises in many smartphone cameras, including previous iPhones, when users take pictures with a light source just outside the frame. Apple suggests two fixes. One, recompose your picture, or two, hold your hand over the camera lens.
Or just, you know, don't take pictures of the sun.
Yeah, or just don't take pictures.
Or don't do that.
Yeah.
And then you'll never be
upset. Disappointed.
At least not about this.
I like purple haze.
So do I.
All in my brain.
Say hello to the Lark Life. It's the latest fitness gadget that's going to sweep the nation, if you have an iOS device anyway. It's a splash-resistant band that has a pedometer inside, and it counts your steps throughout the day. It sort of sounds familiar, but it can also tell you how long you sleep at night, how long it takes you to nod off. There's a vibrating alarm built into the band, and it doesn't automatically track your food intake, but the app does have a food diary where you can at least manually enter in your meals. And it apparently knows the difference between walking and speed walking and running, too. It knows too much.
Kill it with fire. Some World of Warcraft players logged into the game this weekend, only to find everyone had been killed, possibly with fire. And then they started to repeatedly die themselves. Piles of bones littered Orgrimmar, Stormwind, and pretty much all of Azeroth. As hackers had discovered a way to kill all the characters in the game, players or non-player characters alike, game maker Blizzard has appealed for information about the hackers, but also said they have fixed the exploit, so it is now safe to log back in.
Yikes.
Foxconn wants everyone to know that everything is on schedule, including its iPhone 5 production, and that last week there was no strike. Last week it was reported that 3,000 to 4,000 workers went on strike after being pressured to meet strict quality demands.
That sounded funny, just that, you know, we want you to be quality. That's it, I'm out of here. I know that's not
exactly what happened, but also denying that happened at all.
Yeah, exactly. That didn't happen. Nothing happened. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by ShareFile. Technology has changed the way we all work, but you still need to share information. Now, you can walk a piece of paper miles and miles across the world. You can scan it in and email it, but that's not really secure. And in fact, sometimes your documents and your files are way too big for that. So if you want security, and you want ease of use, so the person on the other end just sees a link and a click, and they get whatever it is you're trying to share with them. We recommend ShareFile by Citrix. Industry professionals in law, accounting, financial services, healthcare, marketing, all rely on ShareFile every day to collaborate with clients and coworkers alike while making sure they have the highest level of security and accountability because it's made by Citrix. With ShareFile, you easily send and receive files almost any size, but instead of attachment, they're sent as secure links. Now, you're not storing it in some crazy cloud storage thing you've never heard of or you don't know anything about. What you're storing it in is Citrix's secure share file service meant for businesses. So it's easy to use. It integrates with Outlook and gives you complete control over who has access to files and other features. Plus, you can access your files from anywhere. It gives you the benefits of the cloud because you can log in and get your files from a tablet, from a smartphone, from a laptop. I use it when I'm talking to my accountant or my lawyer. A lot of times I have large files. I don't want to fax those things. I don't want to print them out and mail them. I want to get there fast, and I want to get them there secure, and I want to know that those guys looked at them because they're charging me by the hour. So check out ShareFile.com with our special offer. Sign up today, receive a free 30-day trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click on the radio microphone, and enter TNT. Remember, visit ShareFile.com. Type in TNT, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. All right, let's talk about that story about the U.S. Congress's House Intelligence Committee, chaired by Mike Rogers, co-chaired by Dutch Ruppersberger. He's the minority member, saying neither company, referring to Huawei and ZTE, was willing to provide sufficient evidence to ameliorate the committee's concerns. Neither company was forthcoming with detailed information about its formal relationships or regulatory interaction with Chinese authority. Neither company provided specific details about the precise role of each company's Chinese Communist Party committee. Based on the available classified and unclassified information, Huawei and ZTE cannot be trusted to be free of foreign state influence and thus pose a security threat to the United States and to our system. They basically accused him of not cooperating. Now, they didn't prove anything. It's all allegations. They're saying, we were investigating these allegations of improper contacts, investigating allegations that the government is able to redirect traffic from telecom equipment made by these two companies. Remember, it's not just cell phone handsets they make. They also make routers and backbone stuff, backbone devices, things that help you to make a network. Huawei was started by Reng Zhengfei, a former member of the People's Liberation Army, in 1987. And that, I think, starts a lot of the concern about that company. Both companies have had problems striking deals, investing, trying to complete mergers and acquisitions. And both companies say, look, we operate in 150 countries. We have a standard for cooperation. Bill Plummer, Huawei's vice president for external affairs here in the U.S., said Huawei is a world-trusted company with products globally proven to be secure. Chinese telecom companies have been developing their international business based on market economy principles. So for us, it's sort of a your word against theirs. The U.S. Congress hasn't proven anything, but they've said, well, we didn't get a lot of cooperation. We're suspicious of these folks. We've got a lot of anecdotal information that it tends to indicate that they're doing nasty things that might be a security risk. Don't buy them, and we recommend we not allow any mergers that would bring them into U.S. businesses. Meanwhile, Huawei and ZTE are saying, look, we operate in lots of countries without any of these problems. Nobody's proven anything. We're committed to safety standards and to not violating these things. We don't know what you're talking about. The third piece of information before we start discussing this is that Cisco has lost a lot of their world market to Huawei and ZTE in various parts of the world. Where Cisco is still number one is in the United States. So nothing that we know here proves anything, but is this the U.S., and I'm not suggesting anything nefarious, but it's saying like, hey, we need to protect our own here. Cisco's still number one in the U.S. Let's keep it that way. Keep Huawei and ZTE out because, hey, they might be doing something nefarious, even if we can't prove it. Or is this a real concern? Is it something where they can't prove it in Congress because it's classified what they know, but they know that there is an intelligence risk going on here?
You know, the whole Cisco thing might be onto something there because to me, this is like, okay, the U.S. House Intelligence Committee asks these companies a series of questions, doesn't get the answers that they want or the answers that they think are sufficient. So they say, well, we don't actually know if anything's happening, but maybe it could happen. So therefore, instead of, doing your own vetting of any company as an American company before you work with them, we just don't think that you should in general. That is a really good excuse for keeping an American company like Cisco in a stronger position.
And in the statement of neither company provided specific details about a precise role in the Communist Party, it's like, okay, well, if there are no details, I don't know how you could possibly provide them. But if there aren't, I mean, I guess you can hide them as well. So it's that kind of like, well, you didn't not say this didn't happen. It's kind of like, well, what exactly happened there? So that seems like, the United States being a little bit protectionist when it comes to, you know, what companies succeed. But one of the things that was pointed out in the findings was it's telling the companies, American companies, you might want to think twice about using Huawei things, especially with intellectual property, because this is the stuff that's flowing through the networks. So if you're like an American company like Apple, which has tons of intellectual property, maybe you don't want to have Huawei routers over at your data center somewhere else, because that's the stuff that you've been working very hard to protect for the longest time. Because it's not just like, oh, well, these companies shouldn't be in the United States. It's the fact that your data, every company's data, is going through these routers. So if you want that, if you want to be secure and you want to make sure you're not losing years of work and being, all the work you're doing getting moved over to the government, you want to think about this twice. But I can't tell if this is Cisco lobbying very well, if this is a real concern or not.
My guess is it's both. I think Cisco does lobby very well, and I think that there is a friendly relationship here. But I also think there's real concerns. Padre S.J. says that he has actually documented the Huawei gear phoning home. While nothing has been proven, and I don't want to support the idea that you're guilty until proven innocent, when you're talking about telecom gear, maybe caution is best. Although this House Intelligence Committee report is saying they should be banned from mergers and acquisitions, which is a bigger stick than just saying, hey, be careful if you're doing business with these guys. I don't think we got anything definitive here, and I think it is a war of words. I do think it's easy for you to go, if you're in the United States, and say, oh, it's a Chinese company, so don't trust them. If that were the case, we wouldn't be doing business with a lot of the companies that we do business with. You wouldn't have an iPhone. There's a company called Foxconn that built that phone in your pocket, all you iOS users, and they built probably a lot of your Android phones as well. So it's not just, well, it's Chinese company bad. Is this the kind of company that you can trust? Is there an undue influence? I think there's probably undue influence on both sides, frankly. Let's talk about something more fun. Getting fit.
Yeah, well, we don't
is that
know.
Fun?
I think it's fun. So Sarah talked about this earlier. This is the Lark Life Wearable Fitness Tracker. It's getting a lot of buzz today. People like the fitness gadgets these days for whatever reason. $150, hits retailers before holidays. It's not exactly sure what holidays they're talking about. Maybe Thanksgiving. So it uses Bluetooth Smart to auto-sync with your phone. It can tell when you're running or walking. It doesn't automatically track your food intake. You have to do that yourself. But one of the big things that makes this somewhat different than the other devices out there is this contextually aware advice. So like if you didn't get enough sleep, Lark Life will tell you to eat more protein in the morning. Or these little, it'll also give you these little chats throughout the day to tell you, hey, maybe you want to do this. Maybe you want to go for a run today. That'll help you out. You know, the thing is that we've seen a lot of these different gadgets. We've seen Fitbits and we've seen, what's the other one?
Jawbone Up. Bricked after a week.
Nike Fuel Band. Does the Lark Life, considering all the buzz it's getting, if it performs the way it's the way they're presenting it, do you think this is the kind of thing that's going to have a leg up on the competition?
Yeah, totally. Of course, the key part of that is if it actually performs the way it should. Mm-hmm. I have an alarm clock that sits on my nightstand, and I dock my iPad, and it's supposed to use the equivalent of sonar to track me while I'm sleeping and let me know how I slept when I wake up in the morning. It's also an alarm clock. And it's like, it works, but I know it doesn't work that well because sometimes it doesn't show me being awake, even if I have to get up and get a glass of water in the middle of the night, that sort of thing. So it's like, in concept,
maybe
it's
really
cool.
Maybe you just dreamed that you got a glass of water.
Maybe so. Maybe it's smarter than I am. I don't think so, though. I did get up in the middle of the night last night. That sort of thing. So it's like, I want these all to work better, and I think it probably makes more sense to be wearing something that's going to track actually how you're sleeping because there's movement involved in that sort of thing, and you know maybe you can pick up some sort of like pulse information. And that was the cool thing about the Jawbone. It was supposed to be tracking your sleep and giving you an indication of how healthy you are being. Fuel Band doesn't do that at all. Fuel Band is really good with exercise. But it's got
Nike's proprietary calorie count with the fuel score.
Points, yeah.
Well, calorie and all sorts of things like how old are you and how much do you weigh and that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, I think an all-in-one solution, this sounds like it's more of that all-in-one solution than anything we've seen yet.
Now, looking at this device, I keep seeing like all the shortcomings of the other ones. Like Jawbone didn't sync properly, like, didn't have a Bluetooth connection. You had to physically connect it, which a lot of people were
same with Nike Fuel.
This was the confusing part of like if you want to get fit and you're getting one of these wristbands, the more passive
Nike
you can,
Fuel uses Bluetooth.
It does.
The sync?
Yeah. The Fuel Band.
The Fuel Band does.
Yeah.
Every time Eileen had, to charge, I guess it's to charge, you have to plug it into a USB is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah,
not,
it doesn't
not
just
the
charge
syncing,
in the
not
air.
The data syncing.
No wireless charging.
You have to actually plug it into a USB port.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a charging, like, plug.
That's right.
That comes with it. That's what I was thinking of. I was confused.
So I think the big hook with Lark is the amount of passive activity you could do. Like, if it picks up that you're running and you didn't bother to go into your, remember the Moto Active? This is another thing. You could tell it, I'm running now, and then you have to. It's a lot of active things you have to do for it for you to even catalog all your activities. But to have something that's more passive, I think, is an intelligent idea, especially with the Bluetooth syncing, because that's like, oh, I forgot to sync it. Now I didn't have my data in there. I think that's a little strange that existed when it came to the Jawbone Up, because Jawbone was a Bluetooth, as far as I'm concerned, a Bluetooth company when it comes to handsets and headsets and speakers. It seems pricey, though, $150. But Lark's big hook previously was like the sleep, these sleep devices. So they seem like they have an expertise in that, and that's something the Nike Fuel Band just doesn't do. So if it does the best of everything, the biggest complaint I've seen so far is it's gigantic. It looks to be very large. It's not waterproof, and you have to put
splash resistant.
You have to
put
another wristband on top of the wristband when you go to sleep to protect it and you.
What, from what? The spikes that you're sleeping on?
I don't know. They actually show it in the
wow. From yourself.
Yeah, you thrash about a lot.
I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Like I guess somebody, they're worried that you'll crush it. I don't know. That's the problem with all of these devices is that when you're trying to be healthy, whether it's tracking your eating or fitness or whatever, anything that gets in the way, anything that is a step for you to take is a psychological barrier, mm-hmm. right? So this has got the right idea. Put it on, forget about it, and then we'll give you the report. And you can start to go, ooh, well.
You can't forget about it, though.
The gamification starts to come in.
You've got to remember to put the protective cover on.
That's the weakness to me is that you have to remember to put a protective cover on. It's big. You're not going to forget it's on there. I know it was designed by a professional company, but I don't really like the way it looks.
It's very large. Unless you just like chunky bracelet looks, and then you might like it a lot.
Yeah, it's smacks of like 80s design. It's like, this would be great if this is a snap bracelet, I think.
I just feel like all of these, they all sound great to me because I kind of like this wearable computing thing, but it's very much a novelty. I mean, I had a Jawbone up, it bricked, I didn't care anymore. I got a Fuel Band, it bricked, I stopped caring. In a way, it's almost like I felt like I was free. Like,
this thing, death on these things.
Now I just don't, I don't have to get another one, I don't have to think about it anymore.
Fitbit
if I
seems
hit my
to
fuel.
Be the best one so far. And you, mm-hmm. did you brick that one?
I never had one.
Ah.
Also, I'm not that fit.
I'm out of room for things on my wrist, so I can't bother.
You really
with
are. What is it? Is you got a watch on one side, but what's that on the other?
Just a wristband.
What about a nice ankle band?
An ankle band?
Yeah.
Well,
decorative.
You just need that decorative wristband to be a.
That could be the cover to your lark life.
If I attach a Fitbit to this, I'll be all set. I think.
But. Exactly. YouTube wants to get into more channels overseas.
Yeah. Okay, so last year, you might remember, we talked about this actually, YouTube launched about 100 new YouTube channels. So it's independent content creators, the way that there are many on YouTube already, but that YouTube is officially working with to help promote and help with better revenue and profit sharing.
Yeah, I do the Sword and Laser show with Veronica Belmont on the Geek and Sundry channel. Geek and Sundry is one of those channels.
Exactly. Geek and Sundry is an example of a successful channel. All of the YouTube channels aren't just automatically deemed successes, though. I mean, just being a YouTube partner does not mean that all of a sudden all your videos are getting 1 million views. And in fact, that is, it's one of the issues that some of the YouTube partner channels say, you know, they don't really help us as much as they said that they would. And YouTube says, hey, listen,
we never said they
terms
would,
and conditions.
They never said they would market. Well, right. What YouTube's theory is we give people money, it improves the quality of the content, and we're seen less as a place for cat videos and more as a place for high-quality content. But
yeah, exactly.
You have to be the programmer and the content maker.
YouTube also says 25 of those channels of the initial 100 now average more than 1 million views a week, which was up from just 10 channels earlier this year. So YouTube saying, you know, what's everybody complaining about? We're obviously seeing success here. What they're doing now as a company is launching over 60 new channels. So this is destinations, original programming, and clips. The idea is to make YouTube even more TV-like. Obviously, that means someone like me hangs out on YouTube longer because I've got more options of quality content. Advertisers want to pay more because people like me are sticking around longer. And yeah, Tom, there is an international push. Content for the UK, German, and French versions of the site as well. So it's not just a bunch of, you know, ha-ha American funny videos. They're definitely looking to expand in other markets. The rev split I mentioned before is Google gives the channel makers interest-free advances, which can be obviously very attractive to an independent producer, in exchange for exclusive access to their content for a year. Some of the agreements are multi-year agreements. You know, maybe if the independent producer has a pretty good track record going into it already, and Google wants to make sure that they stick around. But some word is that, at least for some of the international partners, those agreements might not be as rock solid. With these new agreements, some of the, you know, advertising revenue rules are different depending on what country you're in and so on. But it's this whole thing is just, it's like, can you name really besides Geek and Sundry YouTube channels?
Nerdist.
Okay. Yeah, that, I know that one too. All right.
My Damn Channel.
Yeah.
Which already existed before that.
I guess my point is like, I don't know how much it matters, really.
I think that YouTube could do more to help the channels. And I'm not saying that because Geek and Sundry in any way is complaining. And it's a little bit of a conflict of interest for me on this. But what I think is that YouTube could do a better job of helping me as a viewer discover what channels I have to choose from. The reason they don't want to do that is essentially they're saying we don't want to prefer the channels we're funding over the channels that independents make. We want to keep it a level playing field. And that makes sense. But sometimes I'm like, I want to see what the best channels are out there on YouTube to choose from. And it's hard to find them. And I think that's some of the frustration of a lot of these channel makers when they say you're not helping us is not that they wanted more than YouTube promised, but they kind of thought there would be a little more promotional juice.
A guaranteed sort of form of success.
And again, I'm not speaking on behalf of anybody when I say that. That's just what I've read in the press and what I hear.
Taking a look at the different channels and the amount of content that's on YouTube at this point. I mean, one of the interesting things of the past year, I've gotten so used to the professional quality on YouTube that when I see something that's amateurish or it's poorly shot or poor audio, I'm like, what is this doing on YouTube? So like, it's completely changed the way I think of it, because it's not that I'm looking for these channels. It's that I'm looking for particular content at the time. So if I'm looking for instructional help for how to build something out of doing woodworking or something, I'll just go to YouTube and look for the video and try to find the best one. And that should filter to the top anyway.
Yeah.
So it's the fact that by volume, YouTube is starting to have a lot of high quality, high production value content that you go there instead of going to like the DIY network, instead of going to the HGTV network. You're going to YouTube instead, because those things might already
be there.
It's
like the networks are starting to just make themselves within YouTube.
Right, just do a search for it. Like, I don't need this nonsensical, like, I need to go to your site or your site. I'll just search for it.
And that's the tension. In fact, Wayne Knight points it out. A curated experience is not what I want particularly, but it's what a lot of people want, because they want help sifting through the channels. But if you're going for, with like say, woodworking content, that's what YouTube's best at. That's what it was built to do, which is like, you tell me what you want to find, and we'll show it to you, you know? And it works very well for that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the word channel might be the wrong word for it, because that seems very passive, right? You're going to sit there and just watch a channel all day. And you can do that. You can subscribe to a channel. But I don't find myself necessarily liking everything on that channel, just like I don't with cable. Like, I like ESPN just fine, but I don't want to watch every single thing on,
sure.
on that
yeah,
network.
Yeah. But then there's other channels like H+, where it's just the series H+. Mm-hmm. So, of course, that channel is perfect, right? Because exactly. Everything you get there is either an episode or commentary on the episode. And you may not want to watch everything, but at least it's related to the series. But even they have a hard time getting the word out that they are, in fact, a regular series that's available on YouTube. You know, that it's hard to be heard above the din, because YouTube does have so much good stuff.
It's still early days. There's just tons of content. And how many hours per video is being uploaded per
ridiculous
minute.
Ridiculous.
So
amounts,
there's lots of content.
All right, let's take a break and thank our sponsor for this episode, Squarespace.com. Now, faster and easier than ever to create a high-quality website or blog. You need a destination for that content that you're creating. You probably want something reliable. And you can do it yourself, but then you have to be responsible for the hosting and the uptime and paying for the storage. If you do it through Squarespace, it's affordable. At $8 a month for the limited plan, $16 a month for the unlimited plan, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage, and you get 24/7 support from Squarespace. They're there. If anything goes wrong, you just contact them, and they will help you out. They take care of all the dirty work of serving the website and making sure it's reliable. You just focus on the content. And even the content they help you out with the ability to use some of their templates that you can just tweak to make look the way you want to look. They make sure that your site is served the right way, no matter what device somebody's looking at. They'll change the image sizes. They'll change the template layout so that it fits on a phone, it fits on a tablet, it fits on a bigger screen. But you don't have to take my word for it. Go try it out absolutely free right now, squarespace.com. You don't have to give them a credit card or nothing. Just put in the name of your website and get going. You can even import your old website just to see how it looks in one of their templates. And once you do, I think you're going to like the Squarespace 6. I think you're going to like the easy WYSIWYG approach that they have. And if you do decide to pay for it, use the offer code TNT10. You'll get 10% off the first purchase on new accounts. So that's 10% off the first month of your monthly. Or if you pay for a whole year, you not only get 10% off with the offer code TNT10, but you actually get a free domain name as well. If you're looking for a domain name, just throw that right in. So go try it out, squarespace.com. And if you do decide to keep it, use that offer code TNT10. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Motorola getting rid of, I'm kind of bummed, they're getting rid of one of my favorite things that they tried in Webtop. This is the idea that you take your phone, you put it in a dock, and it becomes a laptop.
It's a sad time. Motorola told CNET that they are ending support for Webtop. They're not going to have any more Webtop software or that dock, no more laptop accessories. So if you want to take your phone and make it into a laptop, you're not going to do it with Motorola phones anytime soon. And Motorola says it's dead because Webtop becomes more and more redundant as Android adds desktop-like features. And adoption wasn't strong enough to justify devoting more resources to the project. That being said, I believe the dock cost them like $500. So maybe that's why the adoption didn't work.
Originally,
so the original dock for the Motorola Atrix, which was like one of the
first. It came down in price, but it didn't really help much.
So it seems like, Tom, you're down. Jason, you seem a little down about this too.
I don't know. You know, I always liked the promise of Webtop. I thought it was an interesting kind of thing to be able to do. It's just in execution, it was never it was never what you hoped it would be. And I think that's part of the reason why adoption wasn't very high. You know, it sounded great and it looked great. The idea and concept was great. But when you actually sat down to try and use it, it was slow. It just wasn't as seamless and enjoyable as you would hope. There were definitely a lot of people that swore. Well, maybe a lot is the wrong word. But there were definitely people that supported and swore by Webtop. But it just didn't catch on.
I think it suffered from the demise of the netbook as well.
Yeah.
As people start moving towards ultrabook type, thin and light laptops, they see less of a need to say, oh, instead of buying a netbook, I'll get the Webtop system and that'll save me some money, because they're not buying a netbook at all anyway.
I mean, we have all these other crazy form factors. We have transforming tablets and hybrid things and pad phones.
The pad phone is kind of apparent, isn't it?
How is it that this is the one that failed? It's like, okay, well, you could dock your phone into it. This should have worked, except for the pricing. Sarah, you got a really sour look on your face.
I don't understand why everyone's so bummed. I mean, it was expensive, kind of clunky, and people have a lot more choices now. This is just sort of the way evolution works.
I was hoping that Google would do something better with it. That's really what I was hoping for.
Maybe they're clearing the way for that.
It was the promise of it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
More than anything. It's like tablets. We were all really excited about tablets in 2000 at CES when Microsoft showed off tablets. And it was the same experience. Like, oh, they're just not quite as good as we want them to be. And it took 5-6 years before tablets finally
got perfected. Maybe it'll make a comeback like UMPCs did.
Yeah, I honestly don't think that this is...
It probably will, actually.
Do exactly that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't think this is the last that you're going to see of this type of thing. Whether we see Motorola do it again or not, I don't know. Maybe some other company does it and does it really well, and then Motorola comes back out. But quite frankly, like, limiting this to just one brand, I think, is the greater issue. If Google was able to integrate this into Android as a whole and make some sort of specification around it, or some sort of kind of global Android move in this direction, then I think it would actually be pretty successful. These accessories that are isolated to one device, I don't think they're ever going to do very great. And this was, you know, maybe a little bit broader than that. It was isolated to a few Motorola Android phones, but that's still pretty narrow.
I think it'll definitely come back in some way with Ubuntu on Android. That's the way this is going to come back. Maybe not a laptop form, but a dock your phone, use that experience.
Yeah,
that's way more powerful than this thing ever was.
Good call. The BBC and CNN and Wikipedia, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Huffington Post, TechCrunch, all have something in common. They were targeted by Microsoft in July in a takedown notice to Google to delist them from the Google search engine because they contained the number 45. At least that's the only thing that people could figure out, according to looking over the Chilling Effects notice. Chillingeffects.org regularly posts takedown notice that are submitted to Google, and this one's getting some attention today. Back in July, an automated request was sent. Most of the things, if you look through this, are to torrent sites. They seem to be targeting people who were infringing on the Windows 8 beta. Kind of hilarious, because the Windows 8 beta was available for free. I guess Microsoft needs to defend their intellectual property, and this is the way they do it. But somehow, these sites that I mentioned got listed as well. The BBC page that's listed there is about day 45 of the torch run. So there was some weirdness in the algorithm that was incorrectly targeting these. Now, most of the sites that I mentioned, in fact, all the sites that I mentioned so far, were on a Google whitelist. So the pages were not removed from the Google search engine. They were checked against a whitelist, and they said, oh, no, BBC's okay. Don't remove that page. However, a couple of sites that were listed that weren't infringing did get pulled out of Google, according to just doing a search for these pages. A page on AMC Theaters it cannot be found on Google's search engine. A page on Real Clear Politics was delisted. And I don't know. This is Microsoft France, by the way, that is responsible for this notice. But I believe it was a third-party company that was doing the automatic listing. This brings us back to that conversation we were having the other day about YouTube and their DMCA notice, which is how do we do this? The complaints about the DMCA used to be like, well, someone can make frivolous or nefarious takedown notices to press speech. And the response often was, show me an example of that. And DMCA was young enough and the internet was young enough that it hadn't happened. Now it's starting to happen regularly. And here we get another example. What's the solution to this? Does the Digital Millennium Copyright Act need to be revised? Is there even a possibility that anyone would consider that, given the current political situation?
I mean, I don't know if it could be revised. I mean, theoretically, everything should be able to be revised, but I don't know about the actual practicality. But what I'm looking at really here is the amount of automation tools that are causing the issues, right? Because we're not having people look at these things. And people were excited when people thought that YouTube was going to look personally at these things. And people are going to look at what's going on instead of going, oh, is that the number 45? You're taking it down. Like that kind of, when you go with these database style kinds of things, or you're going with these automated tools, you're bound to have lots of errors. So the thing is, should you be overbroad and go after as many as you can, and then they pop back up because they're legitimate? Or do you go the other way, where there's a lot more that are available out there all the time, and you're being hurt that way? So the real question is, what other tools can exist to handle this better? Because I think that can move much faster than any kind of legislative change, because that's a whole other animal.
Well, or if something like this happens, obviously the number 45 doesn't, I mean, this is not a reason that anything should be coming down, and it was a mistake. 45. So as the companies figure out, okay, well, why did this happen? Let's fix this. Hopefully it won't be replicated again. Then the tools get smarter. Hopefully.
But you're always going to have these kinds of errors, because what is fair use and what belongs is a judgment call, and algorithms mm-hmm. do make mistakes. I mean, artificial intelligence isn't to the point where we can trust the robots to tell the difference yet. And there's so much data flowing around the internet. I think that's even I don't completely understand, and I, like you guys, work with it every day. People in a lot of these legal offices, sometimes I don't think they can wrap their heads around just exactly how much data there is flowing through.
But this is a great example, because this is Microsoft going up against BBC and other, you know, major companies. So this isn't just like...
But they didn't get hurt because they're on the corporate whitelist.
But it's being publicized.
Because they're buddies.
That's the thing.
Google.
It's being publicized, and they were whitelisted. But the point is, they don't want this to happen because maybe BBC owns another site that doesn't necessarily exist on a whitelist. Either they're going to deal with Microsoft and say, whitelist us now. Or they're going to say, listen, you guys have to do better than this, because you're going to affect more content than you think. Mm-hmm. So if you annoy the big players, that's always good for the little guys, because it's the little guys who get crushed and you don't know anything happened. But when the whitelisted folks get kind of messed with, it's when...
They're whitelisted. That's my point.
I understand that nothing was taken down. It was the fact that it's being reported at all.
All right.
But I'm actually excited about that people are saying, hey, look, you're giving them special treatment, but this shouldn't have happened at all.
You're giving us special treatment. Thanks. We're good. That's what I'm afraid is going to happen.
I hope not.
Finally, those of you who wanted those lightning adapters for your iPhone 5s can cheer.
Yeah, well, when you get them, because I ordered mine, and apparently some people who did order their connection kits, the 30-pin to 8 or 9, if you want to call it 9-pin connector, are getting notices via email that their units are shipping. I have not received mine yet. But then again, I didn't order my phone at midnight that day. So who knows? Maybe I'm 12 hours back or whatever. But that's good news, considering that you just get the one cable with your phone. So I just carry that around with me everywhere I go now.
I bought a second cable, because you can buy those
you
at
can.
The store.
And they were cheaper. Right.
That's the other thing.
$19.
They were $19 versus $29 and I think $39 for the actual a converter cable. And I was like, that's a ripoff. I'll just buy a second cable for my non-existent iPod Touch.
Yeah, but I've got all these little charging stations around my house, you know, and those charging stations can just stay there with the little connector.
I have an alarm clock radio that I can only dock my iPad in, not my iPhone.
Probably have the same one.
Yeah.
Is it the Renew Sleep Clock that
No, it's not the
sleep?
Renew Sleep Clock. Oh, it's a, okay. It's an iHome device.
Oh, you guys are talking it wrong.
So that's actually something that's really happening that's not a rumor in the land of
Apple. Hey, do you have
any
rumors, though?
Well, yeah, actually. We mentioned that whole idea of the iPad mini being ordered in large quantities. 10 million
for Q4. The imaginary mini has been ordered in large quantities.
You know, I'm going to go out on a limb, Tom, and maybe I'm shooting myself in the foot here, but I'm going to say that it is no longer mythical.
Don't shoot yourself in the foot out on a limb. You'll fall.
No, my feet don't really grip that well. I know.
It seems likely that it's true, but we haven't heard anything official.
It's true. Yeah, no, we obviously have to remind you that we don't have, you know, a date for an announcement or anything. But okay, for the purposes of debate, let's just say, okay, iPad mini's happening. It's, you know, going to roll out, you know, in time for the holidays. The sheer numbers of what may actually be being manufactured from Apple are huge. 10 million units for Q4, which, as I mentioned in the news views, is about twice as many Kindle Fires that Amazon is expecting to manufacture. So this doesn't really mean, you know, sales, but it means obviously the company is saying, well, potential sales. We don't want to run out. We want to make as many as possible and be smart about it. And of course, there are rumors that Apple's manufacturing partners, at least over in Taiwan. There's actually an analyst named Brian White. He works for Takipa. He's traveling in Taiwan. He says he's talking with component suppliers, and he says that we should expect something really nice. He says Apple did not skimp on the aesthetics of the much-anticipated iPad mini. In fact, we believe the iPad mini could outshine the new iPad in terms of how the device feels in a consumer's hands. I don't know what that means.
Massage, like hand massage?
Well, I think maybe that is speaking a little bit to how the new iPad ended up being a little bit heavier and thicker than the iPad 2.
And a lot of people LTE say that about iPhones, especially the iPhone 5. It feels good in your hand. It just feels right.
Yeah, it feels kind of hollow, really, if you're used to the if you're used to the heavier phone. So if it was a lighter, smaller iPad, I see where could surprise and delight. But I don't really understand, without having a Retina display, how it would be anything that's just super wow compared to the new iPad. Because, I mean, that's huge.
Real quick, back to that 8 to 10 million number of units. Comparing that to Kindle Fire, I think is a little bit of a mistake. Because Kindle Fire, HD, only launches in several countries. Apple's been really good about hitting internationally when it comes to iPads. They have different deals with different carriers. And we don't know if the iPad mini would have data connectivity either. That's the other thing. So they can get, if this is basically a big iPod mini, iPod Touch, then it could be anywhere any given time.
That's the iPad.
Right. I'm mixing
this
up.
This is a medium iPod
Touch.
It's
the medium iPod. It's the big one with the tablet. But this idea that it's going to probably, all the mock-ups make it look like a big iPod Touch or a big iPhone. It's got that really different colored back. It's not as that weird like slivered shape that exists on the iPad. It looks like it probably will have the newer design that Apple's been going towards. The iPhone 5, usually the iPhone is the indicator for how the devices will look. Mm-hmm. So if the iPad mini is going to look more like that, it's going to make the old iPad look really
old.
You
could say iPad 3.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, the third generation iPad is going to look a little bit dated compared to this new thing, because it's going to be the new Apple style. And in January, we're expecting the new iPad.
I mean, I'm just exhausted. I'm exhausted by everything iPad, iPhone, iOS, and Apple. And I even do shows about that company exclusively.
You have a show called iPad Today.
I do.
And a show called i5 for iPhone.
Yeah. In fact, I shoot that right after this show on Mondays. But, you know, it's like, oh, gosh, I just get tired sometimes.
Maybe the rumor that invitations will go out this week will be true. And then we can actually start saying real things about this. All right. Meanwhile, let's check the randomizer. I hope, randomizer, an iPad mini rumor doesn't come up. No, it's the Oatmeal's Tesla Museum.
Yeah.
They actually bought the property. We knew they were funded. They target for their Kickstarter for making a Tesla Museum was just over $800,000. They got $1.4 million. And now a group known as the Tesla Science Center at Wardenclyffe has bought 16 acres on eastern Long Island to create the Tesla Museum. Good job, Matt Inman.
That's incredibly impressive that this is a museum that will be just dedicated to Nikola Tesla. This isn't like, oh, he's going to have an exhibit. It's like, no. There's a lot of things that, I don't know if you watch enough movies, you'll know that Tesla's kind of like a cult hero, effectively, when it comes to all things to do with invention. So it's interesting to see that he's going to have his own museum. And it was funded this way. That's like the feel-good story of the year. Like, wow, we need $800,000. We're going to get $1.4 million. It's not for a little video game unit. It's for a museum.
Let's just make a Nikola Tesla museum. And guess what? Now we have a Nikola Tesla museum. People get overhyped about Kickstarter and what it can do, but I think this is a great example of somebody saying, hey, I have an idea for something I would never be able to do without being able to just ask a bunch of people. Like if I had to go to venture capitalists or donate big donors, I don't know that I would be able to get them convinced to do this. But he was able to just go to people who were as excited about Tesla as he was. And
nobody had to actually donate that much money.
Right.
I mean, it's why Kickstarter works sometimes.
Exactly. Let's take a break and thank our other sponsor, which can get you a little money without having to invent a Kickstarter. You got some old gadgets lying around. You want that new iPhone or maybe that iPad mini. Before you get it, make sure you sell your used phone to Gazelle for cash. Cash you can use to pay for your upgrade, whatever it is you want to get. Gazelle is simple and fast. Here's what you do. To go to gazelle.com, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. You tell Gazelle the condition. They'll even buy broken iPhones for cash. So go ahead and put it in there and see what they'll give you. They give you a risk-free offer for your gadget. You can lock in that quote for 30 days. You have 30 days to decide if you're going to take the offer. But once you've locked in the amount, it's locked in for 30 days. So the faster you do it, the better you've got a chance of getting more money because gadgets don't get more valuable over time. Go to gazelle.com now. Get an offer for your iPhone or your MacBook or your iPad. Do it today because your iPhone may lose value every day you wait. Then you get paid in cash. Payment is fast within a few days of your item being received, and it's risk-free. They paid out almost $50 million to 300,000 customers, more than 300,000 customers. It's easy. It's low hassle, and it's free shipping. They let you print out a label right at home, or they'll even send you a box in some cases. Sell your used iPhone today at gazelle.com or your used Samsung Galaxy S3 at gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Let's check the calendar. Not much on it.
Angry Birds Star Wars is coming November 8th. Nobody else wanted to be in the calendar with news like that.
No, how can you stand up against that?
Yeah. Now, it's actually kind of a quiet week, at least so far. You never know how the calendar will be tomorrow, though.
Who knows?
It'll be a whole different calendar, and it will.
Maybe we'll have an invitation.
On the calendar, we'll say check
Angry Birds Star
tomorrow.
Wars, you guys. Didn't we already do that? Oh, Angry Birds Space.
Right. Now they've gone farther.
Yeah.
And back in time.
A long time ago.
Right. Galaxies.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got an email from John. Hey, John, thanks for writing us an email. He says, I've noticed some changes on the product page that you guys might be interested in. First, it no longer has the FTC disclaimer saying that they can't sell it. I guess that means that they got approval. Also, they have clarified the $50 LTE package. I think he's talking about the Kindle Fire. They, at a minimum, strongly implied that the LTE package was $50 a year. It now clearly states that the $50 package is only available for the first year, which I think makes the tablet less attractive. I haven't heard anyone else talking about these. So if you're worried that the Kindle Fire HD LTE was not going to be able to be sold, well, they've got a disclaimer saying that they can sell it. But yeah, $50 only gets you the LTE package for the first year. I'm guessing that's leaving them flexibility to see how it goes. And then the second year, it may be $50 again, or they may raise the price to $60, or I don't know. I mean,
there was a very interesting hook that Amazon was saying when they were introducing it. They were saying, okay, look, you can get LTE for a year for $50. That's great. But what happens after that first year?
We'll see how that first year goes.
Go and try it. We'll talk about it later.
Got another email from Dion up in Saskatoon in Canada. Says, recent TNT, you were talking about the Nest. That's the thermostat. And I was tempted to get one, so I asked someone I work with who had one. Oddly enough, he said the day before Nest rolled out an update that broke his thermostat, and now he has to connect the red wire.
Don't cut the red wire.
Dion says, I know the weather's nice in San Francisco. A broken thermostat for a week might not be a big deal, but in Canada, it means thousands of frozen water lines and water damage. What if they'd rolled out when I was on vacation? I don't know how widespread, but I know I decided not to buy one, and now I'm curious what Nest is doing to help affected customers. Maybe disable auto updating would be a good start.
This is one case, so we don't want to generalize. Obviously, all kinds of thermostats might break, but yeah, if anybody else has had this kind of issue with the update, let us know. One case does not mean that everybody has had this issue. And Veronica Belmont has a Nest. She was talking about it yesterday on Twit, and she did not have this problem. So it may be sporadic. Who knows? But yeah, believe me, I understand in Saskatoon, you don't want to be messing around with the thermostat. You want to make sure it works. So fair point. Well, that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thanks for submitting stories on our subreddit, by the way. TechNewsToday.reddit.com. Place to go to let us know what stories you would like us to talk about. It's one of the things we look at when we consider what to throw into the lineup. What 10,000 of you in the subreddit think we should talk about, whether you submitted the story yourself or just voted it up or down. Go check it out, technewstoday.reddit.com. Thank you for finding us on the web. We're there in case you just stumbled across us and you don't know how. twit.tv/TNT is where you find us. You can also email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call and leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Mark Million joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.